Hey again, it's time for another episode of BitNote with David Collins. We'll be playing some great music from various video games, and I hope you have a great time listening. Alright, let's start us off with some nice bit of good old dramatic music. That was great music there. It almost felt like humanity was under siege, which is exactly what happens in the video game that that's from. The game, of course, is Earth Siege 2 by Dynamics, and the music you just heard there was by Loudmouth Productions, which consists of Timothy Stephen Clark and Christopher Stevens, who have made music on a great many video games. Everything from The Incredible Machine to Tribes 2 to Think Tanks. So, Earth Siege 2. Well, as you can tell, it's a sequel, and long story short, robots have taken over humanity. Yes, I know, most of the games I talk about are aliens taking over humanity, but in this case it's something that we created ourselves, robots. And through a really long backstory that doesn't really come into it much, there's basically a robotic uprising, it takes over Earth, and basically you have after 20 years you fight back using these robots, and then of course it turns out that the robots have an extra base on the moon, and that's where the sequel Earth, that's what you have to get out to destroy at the start of Earth Siege 2. So, how do you defeat these aliens? Do you use programming skills? Do you just shoot them? No, you walk around on gigantic bipedal robots. Yes, Earth Siege 2 is what's called a mech game. You drive around on great big walking robots with a huge amount of diverse guns strapped to it, and basically try to destroy every single robotic life form around you that is not immediately friendly. You do this by building your own mechs, destroying other things to gain scrap metal and resources, and then building and buying a new supply of weapons. You can basically customize your weapon, attach new weapons, walk around and completely blast more robots. It's not the only mech video game out there, of course. I mean, there's, of course, Metal Gear Solid that has a mech be pretty much the final boss in it at the end. And, of course, the MechWarrior series that basically came out of the BattleTech universe. And I always know BattleTech because I watched that cartoon when I was a kid and saw all the people going around in these gigantic walking humanoid robots and destroying each other. And I thought, oh, this is cool. And the really cheesy 3D graphics that they managed to throw on times. But Earth Siege 2 is really, really good. It doesn't just give you like a bunch of missions where you're in a robot suit and you blast other robots, although there's that. And it doesn't just, you know, let you customize it as well. But there's a real focus towards the whole story campaign. It was released around 1995, and so while the technology wasn't that good enough to get realistic humans in there, you know, robots were fine with the primitive 3D graphics because everything was flat and shaped and angular, but humans were tricky. So what they did was they, right at the beginning of starting it, you get this basic commander or chief or colonel giving you, who's actually got a full, like, voiced video recording, you know, giving you a brief of the mission and explaining things. And they use that throughout the entire game. You get to, when you start a mission, you get to select squad mates. And so when you're walking along the terrain with all your, in your robot forms, they are too, and you can command them to go to different places. And every time they'll communicate, they'll just suddenly, the screen will pop up with this thing of their face, and they'll say, nice job, or let's go this way, or of course, if they destroyed a robot, or you did, they'd say the infamous, chalk up another kill for the good guys. But yes, there were a lot of little characters and a lot of videos that would just pop up and give you personality. Like, it wasn't just you fighting against robots, but there was a whole campaign there as you were being your campaign to destroy all the robotic defenses and everything and finally make your way to the moon, and how each mission was vital to important and you had to use it one way or the other. And of course, the squad mates were a lot of fun because, you know, they actually kind of helped and you could direct them and stuff. And it was really kind of sad when one time I actually locked onto a mech in front of me with missiles. And just as I shot the damn missiles, one of my teammates walked in front of me and blew up. But unfortunately, you know, it was really tragic, the death scream that suddenly be broadcast as his robotic form was blowing up into shrapnel. But yeah, I kind of felt disturbed by that, so I just restarted the mission when he was back alive and everything. Because this is sort of the game that was, if you actually kill one of these, your teammates, then when you move on to the next mission, they're not there. I mean, you know, you might get another one, but they're gone. So, yeah, you actually feel like having your squad mates die actually has consequences. Who knew? But the game had a lot of fun moments. You were basically, as a robot, you went wrong pretty straightforward scenery, but it was still interesting. You know, there were canyons. Sometimes you had to destroy enemy outposts. Sometimes you had to destroy all these listening posts. There was one tricky mission where you had to destroy the defenses of this robotic installation, but not the installation itself, because you needed that to fly you to the moon and something. Much in the manner of Frank Sinatra, I suppose. But, and of course, there was also Geerling, your commander, who was like, who'd give you briefings or, you know, descriptions and a lot of personality. He'd be on the radio and, you know, showing and everything. And I remember actually there was one time, you know, things would go well. I complete the mission well, and he'd pop up on the screen and go, great job, nice going there. I don't know which actor played him, but it was great to have a lot of personality and feedback in this sort of way. Although sometimes it could get a little funny, because I remember one time I screwed up a mission really bad, and when I went back to him, he said something to the effect of, you know, I wish you were working for the enemy. Then I'd be sure our side won. And like, it was kind of going, dude, look, I'm sorry. I mean, come on, I've done all this work for you. I've plowed it through. Just one screw up doesn't justify getting angry at me like that. And of course, he couldn't hear any of these things because he was just a character in a video game. But I still kind of wanted to let him know that I was upset at the way he just turned his back on me like that. But it was okay. I just pulled off another good mission, and then or at least restarted that mission, and then everything was fine. But really, I just like the atmosphere of the game. I loved the sense of missions and traveling all the terrain and going on these quests and getting mission after mission, trying to get through to the end. And of course, each mission, like I said, is pretty diverse. And suddenly, I get excited when I found out in one mission, I get the actual to fly this kind of like spaceship thingy. Well, not spaceship. It's like a low altitude like flyer plane, but it's really, really cool. And so I had a lot of fun with that, spinning it around. But flying that around and trying to home in on them at enemies and just shoot them and then fly on by. And sometimes I could even have my teammates and mechs below me, so I'd be like, I'd look down at them and think I'm waving, go, hey there, see ya. What are you doing down there walking on those robot machines? I'm like flying around the place. And it'd be fun. And one thing about the system also was that it had localized damage. You know, you couldn't just, it's not just a case of you hit anywhere and your HP bar goes down. Each part of the suit or vehicle you're in had its own damage. So you could like lose an arm or, you know, if you lose a leg, you're obviously screwed. But one time I was flying the flyer, and the very tip, you see, the flyer consists of the central thing and then the big things on each side, and these tip flaps at the very edge on each side of you. And one time I actually destroyed one of those by accident, and then suddenly my plane started leaning towards the side, and I was going, damn it, I can't keep this plane thing steady. So I said, I know what I'll do. I'll destroy the flap on the other side of the wing, and that'll balance it out. So I ended up flying around near a cliff, and I scraped along the side, and then suddenly that was gone, and but then suddenly the complete plane was completely unbalanced. I couldn't keep it straight. It was like it was like trying to keep a broomstick upright. It just kept sliding to the left and right, and it just didn't work very well. Another time, I think I had to restart that mission too. Another time, actually, I was on the surface of the moon, and I decided, after getting some serious heavy damage, I ended up just going crazy and just scraping and just flying it, the plane, while scraping along the ground of the moon's surface. And that completely screwed up all these things. And suddenly there was a great big explosion, and I suddenly went right up into the air. And then suddenly I looked at my damage screen. The flaps on each side of me were gone, and so were the great big things on each side of me gone. So all that was left was just me, the cockpit. The cockpit was just there, and I was going arcing through the sky, and I thought, this is amazing. I'm completely on my own. I don't have any of those items. I just have the core thing that keeps me surviving. So then as I was moving towards the ground, I like tried to push the thrust to pull up again, and suddenly nothing was happening. None of the thrusters or anything would work. And then I looked at the damage report again and realized, oh, wait a sec, those things on each side of me, they were the engines of the plane. They were the things that were actually making me move. So I looked back at the view and just saw the cockpit, that small little capsule that contained the core part that I was in, as it arced through the air, me unable to change it or affect its course or do anything at all. And as I mashed at all the controls, I could do nothing as it completed its arc, plunged downwards and exploded into the surface of the moon. Good times. I'm really appreciative to that school friend of mine who lended it to me. So anyway, let's move away from games about mechs shooting each other and move to a more traditional game about people shooting each other. This is a pretty well-known game. And if you recognize that theme, it's bound to have brought back memories. What you just heard was Quad Damage from the game Quake 3 Arena by ID Software. And the music was composed by Sonic Mayhem, which is the name for Sasha Buzzfunk, Dicky Cian, and his associates, who have also made the music for many other games, such as Alex's theme from the game Prototype, which I played in a previous episode. And just from listening to that, you can tell why it's really great music. So, Quake 3 Arena. Boy, where do I even start with talking about this game? Long story short, it's a major deal. I mean, cultures have grown up around this game. It's become huge in video game culture. The engine has been used in many other games, including the original Call of Duty. And the game itself is just perfect in how every little thing slots together. The sound effects, the graphic effects, the announcer voices. So, what is it about? Well, essentially, there's this small self-contained areas, and you are in there, and so are a bunch of other people. And generally, your objective is to kill each other. Yes. It is not a high concept game. There is no philosophical discussion or a thinly veiled satire at modern culture. You are in there, a bunch of other guys are in there, and basically you've got to race around, grab whatever weapons you can, and blast each other to smithereens. High speed, high action. You know, you don't go for cover, you don't casually crouch behind a pillar and then peek out. No, you race around the killer. Around that pillar, you open fire with whatever weapon you've got. If the weapon you have isn't working, you switch to another weapon. If that weapon doesn't work, you switch to another weapon. If you have to retreat, you duck around the corner, grab some health, and just realize that it's only going to be a matter of time before either the guy you are fighting is catching up on you, or you run into another guy who's also fighting against you. It's a free-for-all. If you race around a corner and a rocket smashes into your face and you get blasted to smithereens, 1 second later you're back in the arena and blasting around. You start out with a machine gun, which is fine, but you need more. Weapons are placed everywhere and each weapon has its own strengths and advantages. Rocket launcher, the favorite. Blast off a smoking projectile and try to have it aim and hit the ground near where the opponent will be, not where he is at the time. Machine gun, classic. Rail gun, shoots a gigantic pulse of beam in one direction, but you got to make sure you're on target. And even these games that guns that shoot green glue that if the opponent touches it, it blows up. And of course the shotgun. Most effective at close range, but you got to make sure you're close enough to use it. Everything is fast-paced and arcadey. Sometimes you're dealing with gothic structures of stone and concrete and walls. Other times, you know, frank with canals and arches and grim textures. Suddenly things are a little bright with sci-fi worlds and metallic and as you jump from platform to platform that seems suspended in a great big emptiness of space. Whatever the arena, the rules are more or less clear. You grab which character you'll be. If you want to take time, you specify a username and a color you'll use, and then you just blast into the fray. You don't need to be brought up to speed. You don't need to have someone explain to you the strategy at that point. You just blast in and just keep shooting, grabbing, jumping, spinning about until you get whatever points you needed. The whole game is tuned towards this fast-paced, frantic style of gameplay. In fact, around each level, there are a bunch of places where either weapons can spawn that can give you more power-ups, or even just boost pads that would suddenly shoot you in a given direction. Or, of course, the thing I just mentioned, the quad damage, which will automatically quadruple any damage you do to the opponent. Anytime in a game, you've got a quick decision to make. Do you blast your opponents or do you make it at the fastest you can for the nearest power-up, hope it'll be there, and then quickly use it to turn the tides on your opponents? Whatever you choose, it's going to be a fastest decision because there's really no time for waiting around. The terms run and gun are seldom more appropriate, and whatever arena you go around in, whether you jump from boost pads, constantly snipe with the rail gun, or just come around, get up close and personal, and of course or just try to take the fight right to them, you know that whatever strategy you choose, you just gotta make sure it damn well works. And boy, the strategies this game comes up with. I mean, with a game like this, you'd think it'd be pretty repetitive, but there's just so much little strategy going on. Sure, it's fast-paced as you race around, pick up the health, try to pick up the items, shoot the enemies, react, spin, try to decide. But there's a lot of decisions that go along, a lot of thoughts that you have to do to play out the game and strategies you can use. If you see two people fighting, what's the best strategy? Wait until one finishes off the other or shoot one of them in the back? As I said before, about do you pick up power-ups or do you go directly after your enemy? And of course, there's a whole lot of like little strategies and skills you could use, such as, and I think Quake 3 Arena wasn't the first to come up with this, but it certainly was one of the ones that popularized it, the rocket jump. It makes almost no sense on the face of it. Why would you shoot one of your own weapons in a way that injures you? But the rocket jump proved how devastating the effect of this technique would be. You would run along as a character. You would jump in the air. You would point your rocket launcher directly down at the ground and pull the trigger. The rocket would hit the ground, the blast would hit you, and you'd go flying up into the air. It was a crazy technique that actually no game developer thought that anyone would actually use because they didn't even know they were putting it into the game. It was just a bug, really. It was just a mistake that of the code that just produced an emergent behavior that no one expected. Of course, when a rocket hit a wall or hit a surface, it would blast you in the opposite direction with the shockwave. That was obvious. But they didn't expect that people would be jumping up in the air, shooting downwards and blasting themselves off to high ledges or across areas or everything. But rocket jumps took off into their own. Seasoned players were doing it. Beginners tried to learn how to do it. People messed around with it. I have seen gameplay videos about a guy making his way flying across a gigantic chasm and shooting rockets repeatedly and automatically reaching the surface just as the rocket hits it to blast him off further on his next leg of the journey. It's amazing. People, entire videos and short little films on YouTube have been made about people using the rocket jump and other stunts. It's just blossomed, and even many games since then have implemented into it. The game Team Fortress 2 basically has rocket jumps as something that's going to be expected. The levels of Team Fortress 2 are designed on the basis that players know how to rocket jump. Tips appear on the beginning of the screen explaining to players how to perform the rocket jump. But of course, many players already knew how to perform it from playing Quake 3 Arena and all the fun that was had as a result. And I mean, Quake 3 Arena is a lot of fun. The game is best played in an internet cafe or a LAN party. Some area where there are a lot of computers, a lot of people around you, and you've all hosted, logged in to play a video game together. Now I say, Quake 3 Arena does have a single player, but it's really just the multiplayer version, only played with the opponents played by robots instead. And of course, you can connect online to others in a server and play with other people online, complete strangers who you may only recognize from their name and possibly probably won't even remember them after the game ends. But it's at a LAN party. It's when the players are all in a physical location that it comes into its own. People create huge LAN parties. There have been cases where gigantic warehouses have been opened up and like hundreds of people have streamed in with computers and gigantic tangles of internet cables and all sorts of laptops and everything and screens all set up, all hooked up into a local networking. The local networking making sure that the connection speeds are as fast as possible. Everyone hooked up just to play the video game with each other. It's something that huge moments that playing this game of Quake 3 Arena bring people together. It isn't the only game, of course. There are plenty of other multiplayer games that also have some multiplayer element that people love to play online, but for some time it was really Quake 3 Arena was a huge part about it, and people still know. The fastness, the frantic pace, and it's just the atmosphere that the game brings when you're playing it in a group of people with other people there. You'd be spinning around fastly, jumping from platform to platform. Suddenly you'd see someone who's slightly distracted shoot a rocket their way, it would hit them, blast, they'd be jibbed into pieces. And then suddenly somewhere you'd hear in the room around you, "Damn it!" And you'd smile. yes. And then you just smile to yourself and keep playing, because there is absolutely nothing that beats that feeling. Suddenly, somewhere in that room, someone's had an emotional reaction to something you've done. And so you have a fun time, you smirk to yourself, and then just as you're going along, suddenly out of nowhere, your character dies, and there's suddenly a voice from the game that goes, "Humiliation." And then suddenly you know it. That other person in the game managed to get the gauntlet, the hardest to use weapon in the game, because it's basically just a glove with a buzzsaw at it, and they snuck right up and by you and then used it on you, and suddenly in a game where everyone's shooting each other, they basically managed to melee you to death, and you're pissed, and you go and then you look around, but unfortunately that person isn't smug enough to give some punt of satisfaction, and you don't know who they are, so you just keep playing and playing, and sure, wherever you see that player again, you'll blast something their way, and when they react, you'll know. This time, you'll know exactly where in the room they are. And that is why it is such a great community game. I mean, you know, with experiences like this, it's no wonder that gamers tend to have a very strong community. But yes, like many great games, Quake 3 Arena has gone on to influence many different things. The engine was open sourced, indeed, and many games that are in some variant of the spirit of Quake have been created as well for free and open source, such as Tremulous, Warsaw, World of Padman, and Exontic. ID Software didn't even forget their roots. They've currently got a website called Quake Live where once you sign up, you can basically play a free version of the game online and engage in all that multiplayer mayhem. There's so many examples of video games that existed a long time ago but are now hard to re-experience, but ID Software have done their stuff to keep the experience alive. And maybe it makes them money, who knows. Well, I think that's about it for today's show. Remember, you can get all these episodes on DublinSouthFM.ie. And for now, I think I'll leave you with a great song from the same game and same composers called Rocket Jump. This has been David Collins with BitNote. Thanks for listening.